Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you for the next couple of hours. We're here all week in relief of Blake Murphy. Blake being, I think, wisely load managed. He'll have a lot of work to do post All-Star break with the Jays and Raptors, but he's been giving a bit of a blow. But Julia, that means for us, we are the bullpen pieces being pressed into further action, being asked to get some outs here. I was told, fill up the zone, just throw strikes, don't shake off the catcher, don't be fancy. But generally speaking, it's always fun when we get to do this. Fun, nice to see you in person.
Seriously.
How's it going?
Nice to see you. It has been a while. I'm very, very happy to be here. But before we get started, quick.
Okay.
If you were a Blue Jays reliever, who would you be?
Oh, my God. See, I've made that comparison before about myself and about you and, like, what Blake is and, like, honestly, like, what Blair and Barker are. So, like, I work from the top down. Like, if Blair and Barker are, let's say, Bassett and Gosman.
Right on.
Okay. I would say Barker is Gosman, and I would say Blair, you know, Gosman, pretty technical, pretty open about his game, right? So, I think that's Barker.
Some flair to him.
Some flair.
Right on.
Bassett, you know, a little cranky sometimes, but still extremely efficient and gets a lot of work done. So, you know, that sounds like
lovable.
To me. Very lovable. Absolutely. As well. This is true. So I don't know if that necessarily makes Blake. I feel like that makes Blake, I want to say Jose Berríos, but Jose Berríos has not had the greatest last, like, month or so, whereas Blake has. So I'm not sure that's, like, the neatest comparison, but you and I are, like, the guys being stretched out a little bit, like the opener, let's call it.
Right on. Yeah. Right on. Yeah, I would say, you know, the Bowden Francis of the world.
All right, sure. I'll take it.
But
Brian Burr?
Perhaps.
You know?
Yeah, I would say maybe
Genesis Cabrera?
For me, maybe a Zach Pop.
Okay.
Because I'm in and out, you know? Sometimes you see me, sometimes you don't.
Here's the thing. These days, that's not, like, the most positive comparisons.
Nope.
When it comes to the Jays bullpen. Like, in years past, if you were like, yeah, you're like the Jordan Romano, you're the Jimmy Garcia, you're so-and-so, you kind of feel okay about it, but these days, less so.
Yeah, it has been a tough stretch for a group that was supposed to be a strength, right, show, and it kind of leads us to our bigger talk of this part of the show, which is where the Blue Jays are and where they're trying to go. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts, especially because it has been a while since we've done Jays Talk together.
It's true.
But you're correct in saying that it starts with the bullpen when we talk about maybe the things that haven't gone too right for the Blue Jays over the past month or so.
Well, hey, you know what? Give some credit to the bullpen. They held it down yesterday, at least. For the first two games of this Arizona series, less so, I would say. Yeah. But yesterday, after Cabrera leaves, they did not give up another run for the rest of the game. So I'll give them some credit in that sense. But you're right. The Jays entered the All-Star break at 44-52. So let's say this. I think we're all on the same page about what this season is at this point, right? To get to 89 wins, which is what allowed them to make the playoffs in 2023, they would have to go 45-21 in the remaining 66 games. They played 96 games, 66 games to go. They would have to go 45-21. That is a winning percentage of .681 for the whole rest of the season, Jules. So I don't know. That's like this. That seems hard to pull off. Let's put it that way. So if that's the case, if we're being realistic about what 2024 is, it feels like conversations about this team going forward are going to be about the trade deadline, certainly, the draft as well, which is started last night, going to keep going for these next couple of days. The Jays taking Treya Savage and Cal Steven as their first two picks. So we're going to talk to Jeff Ponce from Baseball America about that. Ben Shulman's going to join us at the bottom of the hour, which will be fun. I haven't caught up with Ben in a while. So we have some news and notes things to get to, certainly. But as you look forward through 2024, it's going to be the draft this week. It's the deadline at the end of the month.
Right.
And then after that, I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting to find Blake and Blair and Barker, and the two of us are going to have a lot to talk about when it comes to post-deadline plans for the Blue Jays this year. Because if you look back to the first half, I mean, I think once the deadline is gone, I think we're going to be largely talking about, in my opinion, like the Buffalo Brigade and like what's become of Joey Votto, essentially.
It's interesting because over the past few years, even before the Blue Jays were contending, by the time we got to the trade deadline, it was pretty clear what direction they were going to
sure.
go.
Yeah.
And it's at least different show that this year we are at the All-Star break and we still don't know what it is that the Blue Jays are going to do. You hear Ross Atkins speak, and he's not convinced that this is it. He really isn't. And so you have all of these rumors swirling up. You know, the Blue Jays can be big players at the deadline. They have some big assets on this roster that could help a contending team win and maybe, you know, generate a return package that sets the farm system back in order, let's say, because it's also a little bit depleted right now. And at the same time, the gap is large for sure, but it is not insurmountable. Yeah. The Blue Jays could still make that run. Weirder things have happened. Now, the odds of that happening seem to be low. We have not seen necessarily enough to inspire trust in that sense. But it is, you know, it's going to be kind of an electrifying trade deadline here because we don't know which way the Blue Jays are going to swing.
Do you think when it comes to the deadline, Jules, that if you're talking about expectations for what will happen, if this team doesn't sell off all of the expiring contracts, we've heard a couple of insiders say this from a variety of sources, that the team has been pretty steadfast when approached by other teams, other GMs across Major League Baseball, that they're not going to sell guys with term. So that would essentially mean like they're not going to sell Berríos. They're not going to sell Bassett or Gausman when it comes to the starting rotation. They're apparently going to hold firm on Vladdy and Bo. So if you're not selling, you're not going to sell Varsho. He has term. Like if that's the case, that essentially limits you to the UFAs, who in this case are Kevin Kiermaier, Justin Turner, certainly, who am I leaving out here? Yusei Kikuchi, Jimmy Garcia, Trevor Richards. Like these, Danny Jansen. These are the guys we're talking about, right? And I think it's tough, right? Because Danny Jansen, a pretty beloved Blue Jay, I would think. After Tim Mesa is no longer a part of the club, Danny Jansen now the longest tenured member of the club. And I mean, a lot of people are saying that Yusei, for example, is going to be the one who fetches you the most at the deadline. But I just find like the conversation about selling is always a tough one for me because certainly fans have attachments to these players, but also like in the world of baseball, as we're seeing right now with the draft happening today, essentially, that it's hard to really forecast like what a prospect is, right? Like they're full of promise and full of hope and it's really exciting, but there's no real way, as we've learned with the Blue Jays and really most teams in Major League Baseball over the last couple of years, that there's no such thing as a guarantee in sport, but even less so when it comes to forecasting prospects. And I think that's why it's tough for me to say, like, yes, absolutely, yes, you do have to sell because we've already begun with this discussion with an eye towards 2025. Yeah. But at the same time, it's just, like, you can never guarantee anything with prospects, which is why maybe it is best they just sell everyone and get as many kicks at the can, see what sticks with all of these prospects, whatever degree they are, like the higher level of prospects to a team's, like, 15th ranked prospect, for example.
This is something that, you know, has been sort of circling, say on X or other social media platforms, in that you take a look, for example, at the Washington Nationals, right? And which started with the Juan Soto trade. The Nationals were just acquiring prospects. And all of a sudden now they are this very, very interesting team, an exciting team to watch that could be contending for years to come here, you know, led by CJ Abrams, who was part of that Soto trade, and other prospects that have come via transactions like that. It's going to be a heartbreaking show, and it would be heartbreaking to finally admit that this contention window is open and it didn't work out. But the fact of the matter is that baseball happens every year. And if it turns out that the Blue Jays need to take a look at the future, then there's no time like the present to start building on that.
I do wonder, when you say the present, Jules, and I've asked a number of our colleagues this, so I'm curious to get your take on this. If you're trying to forecast what the core of this team is going forward, because that's like an exercise we've done in a variety of sports. It's an exercise we've done, certainly, even if you limit it only to Toronto sports. I think it's a conversation like the Leafs. I think we know what the core is because of their salaries, for example. With the Raptors, I think they just finished having that exercise because they traded a bunch of guys, and now the core is decidedly younger after basically all the pieces of the championship roster are no longer on the team. And now here we are with the Jays, kind of like having that same conversation. And for years and years, it kind of has felt like the Jays – I mean, years and years really go just extends to 2019. So it's not like that large a window. But
I mean, that's 5 years.
It's true.
That's years and years.
The pandemic has absolutely warped my sense of time, like 1,000%. But time is a flat circle, as we know, Jules. But the core of this team, always that conversation started with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. And let's just say, for the sake of this conversation, that they are part of the core going forward. And maybe they get traded, maybe they don't re-sign here, who knows. But let's just say, for the sake of this exercise, that they are part of the core. So if you look to guys who are a part of the team right now, and you can factor the UFAs if you want into this, but probably, I mean, realistically, they're probably going to get traded. So, yeah. But you can do whatever you want. Who is a member of the core to you? Is it only Vladdy and Bo? Is it Jose Barrios, who's a younger-ish and is under contract? Is it a Dalton Varsho who has some term? Are any of the Buffalo Brigade the core? Like, what does the core mean to Julia Kreis?
Yeah, I would put Davis Schneider and Spencer Horwitz in there for sure. I'm not convinced about Addison Barger yet. I think he needs to prove himself a little bit more and produce a little bit more consistently so that we can call him a bona fide major leaguer for the Blue Jays in the long term as well as this year. And then on the pitching side, I would say that Barrios is going to be the foundation for whatever the Blue Jays build next in their starting rotation. You look at the farm system, there aren't necessarily that many guys on the pitching side that are ready to come in and help immediately. It's unfortunate that Ricky Tiedemann has again dealt with some injuries and some setbacks and things like that. Adam Macko, same thing, seems to be dealing with a little bit of stuff after, you know, a really, really good start to his year at AA New Hampshire. So I believe that when you look at the core of this team and where they are going from here, there is somewhat of a foundation in place on the hitting side. I believe that Davis Schneider has what it takes to be a very, very good hitter in this league for a long time, based on understanding who he is as a hitter and getting the most of that. Spencer Horwitz has proved that he can hold his own as well and be a deciding factor or a contributor at the very least for the Blue Jays. And then what? Right, Joe? It's even the Vlad and Bo part of this equation is a little murky and uncertain. So there is a regrouping stage coming, Joe. It's all only a matter of when it will be set into motion here.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what direction they take when it comes to supplementing that core. Because is Varsho a part of the core? I'm not sure, but he is going to be on the team certainly going forward. But I think like in identifying who is a part of the core, I've always felt that saying player X, Y, or Z is a core player means that. Maybe it doesn't mean that they're untradeable. Because, I mean, you mentioned Juan Soto earlier. If Juan Soto can be traded not once but twice, then I would say basically every player in Major League Baseball, any athlete can be traded, essentially, right? I think that's kind of like what that says to me. So that by no means
except
means...
Except Jose Ramirez.
Apparently, yes. He might be the only guy who will never leave. He's going to stay in Cleveland for the rest of time, right?
I love that for him.
I do, actually, too. As much as I, at the time before he signed that extension, as much as I wanted him to... you know, want out of Cleveland. It certainly looks like it was a prudent choice for him to stay, given that the Guardians are leading their division and looking pretty good these days. But I also, Jose Ramirez, sneaky good pick for the Home Run Derby later today.
Sorry to sidetrack.
No. but just when it comes to the core, I think it does mean you're looking at guys that are going to be a part of this team for maybe like indefinitely seems too long to say because nothing is indefinite in sports, but for at least a long-ish period of time. And I'm glad you actually brought up both Horwitz and Schneider because I almost feel like their paths to start their major league careers were pretty similar in that they both got called up. They hit the crap out of the baseball. Davis Schneider, which is also by the way, crazy that we are not yet at a full year for Davis Schneider. He got called up in August of 2023 and we're mid-July of 2024. So we're still not even at a full year for Davis Schneider, which is bonkers when you think about it because it feels like he's been on the team forever. But Davis Schneider, after being made a full-time player, because we kind of clamored for it as a collective group of media, the fans, everyone wanted to see more from David Schneider at the beginning of this season. He was not a full-time player, and now he is, like, more or less. He plays every day, kind of like with Merrifield last year, right? Like, he plays a position more or less every day. If it's not the same position, what are you going to do? But since becoming a full-timer, Jules, he has kind of struggled a little bit. Like, his batting average is around 215 right now. I think it's 214. He's near the top of the team in home runs, but he has kind of struggled a little bit. OPS of around 700. And Spencer Horwitz, since becoming a full-timer, has been great, but I do wonder about his ability, once the league adjusts to him, to kind of adjust back, right? And their games are very different, but I think they've diverged a little bit from each other at this point. And I wonder what you feel about Davis Schneider. I mean, you said you think he's going to be a good major league hitter for a long time. So how he gets back to that, for example, whereas Spencer Horwitz basically needs to keep doing what he's been doing.
Yeah. I know we say this time and time again, Joe, but it's because it's true. This is a league of adjustments. Pitching and hitters are constantly adjusting to each other. When Davis Schneider came up and hit pretty much everything out of the ballpark, that, you know, set into motion a process of adaptability by the pitchers. He cooled off after a while, right? Even last year, he did. It happens. And that's when you start seeing maybe the swing and miss at the top of the zone. He's very, very honest about his struggles with the fastball up in the zone and things as such. So this is a game of adjustment. Now, something like the All-Star break, a little bit of a pause in the schedule that allows you to regroup, to see what's worked and see what hasn't, and work on your game with a little bit, like a degree of separation, perhaps. These are the things that can help a young player get back into his groove. And part of becoming an experienced major leaguer is knowing how to take advantage of these moments, of these little lulls, these little breaks in which you can look inward or look at video or whatever it is and work on it with a degree of separation. So maybe that's all that Davis Schneider needs, because he has the talent to do it. And it's not just that he's hitting for power. I know that we are seeing a little bit more swing and miss and things of this of that sort, but he's also a very good on-base guy. There's a reason why when George Springer was struggling, he was the one that was hitting leadoff for the Blue Jays.
Right.
So there is more potential there than simply hitting for power. And the struggles are going to come. I joke a lot about the cliche of this is why we play 162 and whatnot, but it is because those numbers are all going to normalize at one point or another. So yeah, he's struggling right now, but I do believe that he is better than what we've seen in recent days.
I think so too. And you know what? That actually does remind me. We don't have to do it today, but because we're going to be here all week. At some point this week, we should probably do two things. Revisit our bold predictions.
I knew you were going to say that.
From the first half of the season. Because I think you had a Davis Schneider one. So we should probably talk about that at some point. We don't have to do it today. But Camille, I got to pull them up and find out what all of ours are. By the way, none of mine are going to come true either. So
I think we both need to write up a justification and an apology.
I think you're right. And hey, we also got to, at some point, do some second half bold predictions. So think about that as well. Just like have that in the back of your mind. If you're listening, watching, think about that too, because on Friday, the second half, quote unquote second half, they already played 96 games. They're going to play 66 games in the second half. So roughly second half, if we want to call it that. But when it starts on Friday, before that game begins, we should do our second half bold predictions. I actually do have some Davis Schneider thoughts, some Spencer Horwitz thoughts. But you mentioned the All-Star break. The All-Star break certainly is a good time to reset. I mean, I can only think there are a number of guys on this roster who really need it alongside Davis Schneider. I think Jose Berríos kind of needs it.
I was going to say, honestly. Yusei Kikuchi.
Yeah, I think Yusei Kikuchi kind of needs it. I don't think their recent outings yesterday for Kikuchi, Berríos the day before, is necessarily indicative of who they are. But at the same time, there are some underlying things for both those guys in each of those starts where you think to yourself, okay, like maybe they just need a bit of a blow, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they need also to have just a mental reset. I can't imagine that it is easy. And the starting pitchers specifically seem to get asked this more than anyone else. But when they're talking to the media after games, and you know, all the way the media works is the manager talks and then the starter talks for the most part after every game, no matter what, essentially, right? Barring some kind of injury. And for both Berríos and Kikuchi, I think they're always being asked, and it's hard not to, about how. Oh, well, does the uncertainty of the team and the precariousness of the team record-wise and the right at the trade deadline underperforming all these different things, does that make it hard to pitch? And, like, you know what, to their credit, they have said no. And, you know, Pete Walker was on with Blair and Barker last week, and he talked about how he tries to make sure the pitchers, starters, relievers, closers all to a certain extent do treat things on a very day by day, start by start basis, which is probably like the only way you can live in a sport like this, especially for pitchers. But boy, I mean, as much as they say that, it has got to be mentally taxing.
I mean, listen, Sho, if you're facing uncertainty or your job, it's probably going to affect your performance. Same for me, same for everyone else. And of course, these guys go through some extensive mental preparation as well. But and it's not just the trade deadline or the fact that the team is underperforming. It's also that these guys are throwing, as Kevin Gausman likes to say, a lot of stressful pitches. Yes. They're, you know, the Blue Jays offense has certainly done better of late, but for most of this season, it has been the ongoing trend of not enough runs scored and guys pitching in very close games all the time. Gausman was also pretty honest about that earlier this year and saying, yeah, if we're not perfect, we're probably going to lose. So, of course, that is going to affect performance, and it's going to place maybe a little bit of added stress for those guys. So, looking at the All-Star break, this is also a chance to reset in that way. The Blue Jays starters haven't thrown a ton of innings this season like they did last year, which is kind of surprising in itself, because especially when you look at the uncertainty around the number five starter, right? Sure, Alek Manoah coming in for a little bit, and then he gets injured again. Yariel Rodriguez has certainly looked very good of late, but he was also dealing with injuries. He didn't break camp with the team. So there's been a lot of moving pieces.
I'm pretty sure that was one of your bold predictions, that he would break camp with the team.
Yes. Yes, it was. We'll talk about it another day.
Fair.
But you know what I'm saying? There's more than just the fact that the trade deadline is looming and there is uncertainty around the team. There's several question marks, and there have been question marks since the Blue Jays got off to a not-so-great start to the year. That is going to add up. There's no way it doesn't.
Yariel Rodriguez, actually, if you look back to the first half of the season, because I know 44-52 after 96 games is a tough record. It's one of their worst records at the All-Star break, like in 20 years, essentially, like going back to 2004, which is always a rough place to be. But certainly, like, if you're looking at the glimmers of hope, what to look forward to, like, I get this question a lot on Jays Talk, and you and I fielded these questions before, but what if you're a casual viewer or you're a diehard Blue Jays fan, like, what are you looking forward to in the second half? And honestly, like, for me, I talked about Spencer Horwitz a little bit. I am looking forward to seeing him. I'm looking forward to seeing more of the Buffalo Brigade, as we've dubbed them, right? I think Leo Jimenez is, I don't know if he is necessarily like the future starting shortstop of the Toronto Blue Jays, but I do think he is an everyday, or at least a major leaguer. He might not be an everyday player, because I'm not sure. It's tough to be an everyday shortstop. Let's be honest, right? It's tough to be an everyday player. Not everyone can be, but I do think he is a major leaguer. And very few ABs, he feels like to me that he is past the sniff test, right? Like, he belongs on the field, and I think that's a credit to him. And hey, if the calf injury for Bobichet is not healed by Friday, let's say, and he has to spend a little more time on the IL, or other conversations are being had about Bo's future with his team, then you will see more of Leo Jimenez for the foreseeable, like the short term at the very least. And I've liked what I've seen from him. So that's definitely a glimmer of positivity as well. But you brought up Yariel Rodriguez. I actually have enjoyed watching Y-Rod pitch. Like, you and I did a couple of Jays Talks when, I think it was when he pitched in San Diego, when they were on the West Coast, and he played pretty well. All things considered, I think it was maybe an up-and-down start, but I think for a guy that has never, prior to this season, pitched in Major League Baseball, I think for me, even if you want to see a little bit more length, the last two starts prior to his one where he only went four innings, but his last two starts on Canada Day, for example, as well, he was hyper efficient. He was like only a couple batters over the minimum. And yeah, he eventually gives up a home run on Canada Day. But I just, generally speaking, have been very impressed with Yariel Rodriguez. Again, for a guy who had literally never pitched in America, North America, in Major League Baseball prior to this season.
Yeah, it's been certainly a good development for the Blue Jays. And I do believe that deal is going to go down as a steal of a contract for the Blue Jays. It's long term. It's not a ton of commitment financially, and he is pitching like he belongs. It's so interesting to watch him pitch, because obviously this is a Cuban guy. He played in Cuba for a little bit, and then he went over to Japan. He was a reliever. That's how he shined over in Japan, and you can see sort of that game in his delivery, yes. the Japanese game in his delivery.
Leg but kick,
yeah. Right, but at the same time, he's Cuban, and so you can kind of see that too, the Central American or Latino influence in his delivery and his mechanics. And then definitely the fire, right? This is a guy that is having so much fun every time he steps on the mound. And so, yeah, that is a nice silver lining or something to look forward to, not just this year, show, but moving forward. And if I may add, and this may be a little bit off of left field here, but I am looking forward to continuing to see if George Springer's renaissance is for real.
Yeah.
He's one of the most fun guys to watch when he's on. And he's been on for the last little bit. So if anyone can, you know, help the Blue Jays be the motor in this very, very tall task that we have ahead, if they decide to stay the course here after the deadline, the Blues are going to need George Springer.
Yeah, we often say this team goes as Bo Vladdy and Springer do, and two of those guys have not done it for a large majorities of the season, but Springer does look like he's rounding back into form, yeah. So we'll see what the second half of the season holds after the All-Star break for him. On the other side of the break, we're going to chat with a guy you hear from and will see certainly more, Ben Schulman, Blue Jays radio play-by-play voice on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He'll stop by. We'll chat with Ben. Maybe we'll ask Ben, Jules, the question of the core and ask him what to expect from guys like Spencer Horwitz and George Springer and maybe Yariel Rodriguez as well. So still lots to come on the other side. You're listening to Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and across the vast Sportsnet Radio Network. Show and Jules here with you all week. We are here in relief of Blake Murphy. Blake will be back next Monday. We're going to connect with Ben Schulman, Blue Jays radio play-by-play on the Sportsnet Radio Network very shortly, Jules. But before we do, we were having a conversation before the break about the core and about which position players fit into that core. I am curious, before we bring Ben on, how do you evaluate pitchers and their status as a part of the core? Because I mentioned before that Berríos might be one of those guys. I think that's a possibility, mainly because he's under contract for a long period of time, and he's not particularly old, right? So I think that those two things you always feel good about, right? And I think generally speaking, Berríos has acquitted himself pretty well, but still, I mean, like, you know, recently a lot of home runs given up. He cruises and then runs into some trouble. Like, how do you evaluate pitchers? Because I think we can agree that Gosman and Bassett, they're a little older, even if they're going to be on the team going forward. I don't know if they're part of the core, but Berríos, how do you evaluate him?
Yeah, I definitely say that Berríos would be number one in that conversation, in the conversation surrounding the core and how the Blue Jays are going to move forward. I'm not necessarily convinced that Gosman is not part of that conversation. I think he could be.
He's not that old.
He's not that old, first of all. And second of all, he has done enough show in my mind to at least, you know, warrant that conversation. He's been very reliable for the Blue Jays for the most part. And it's clear that he likes playing here. So, you know, moving forward, maybe this is a guy that the Blue Jays could even bring back after his term is done here as a veteran, as a guy who can shore up a rotation and serve as a mentor, which is something that he has done also with younger pitchers in this staff. Other than that, though, I mean, you would have to wait to see if a guy like Ricky Tiedemann can make it.
That's true,
and
yeah.
Stay up and then what? it's a little bit of a question mark right now, but you know, a guy like Jose Berríos is a perfectly good place to start. The Blue Jays are going to have some heavy lifting to do here.
Let's bring in Ben Schulman, Blue Jays radio play-by-play for the Sportsnet Radio Network, into this conversation. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. I apologize. Thanks for having me on. I apologize. The video wasn't cooperating. I I grew out in honor of Chris LaRue a mustache for the break, and it didn't even get to show for my one purpose. So I'm going to assume my girlfriend was behind this and she didn't want the world to see it.
That's fair.
Ben, we're here all week. So if you want to call in a different day, we would love to see the mustache.
I know. Okay. I gotta see it, honestly. Like, you've said so many times that, like, you are effectively incapable of growing a mustache. So I've never seen you with facial hair. So I need to see it, essentially.
I see. I'll believe it when I see it thing.
Well, Ben, we appreciate you joining us regardless of the method. So thank you for popping by. We were actually, when we brought you in, and we did this in the first half of the show, but we were having the conversation about what it is this team has to offer when it comes to the core. Like, what makes up the core of this team? And you and I have had these conversations before, but I'm curious, after a 44-52 start to this season, has that changed at all for you? Like, if you just put Vladdy and Bo aside, just for now, just for the sake of this conversation, like, are there a lot of other guys that come to mind when you think of who comprises the current core of this squad?
Yeah, I think I maybe think about it differently than other people do, but I think your contractual situation is somewhat going to determine if you're part of the core. Like, okay, you guys were talking about Jose Berríos right before I hopped on. You know, I don't think you'd want to trade him, but it's an awkward contract to trade anyway because he's locked in so much and he is a good player. I think at the end of the day, he's a part of your core. You know, have things changed with other guys? I think there are some guys, frankly, that, you know, we're looking for bounce backs this year, or we're coming into this year without having, you know, great seasons behind them and continuing to not play well. Hurts your long-term standing for sure. I mean, you know, this is just one person and not trying to single anyone out specifically, but 2 years ago, you would have certainly thought Alejandro Kirk was your catcher of the future. Do you really think that as much at this point? Probably not. So I think it has had an impact just when you look at individual performances. The record is what the record is. But in some of the players that maybe would have been close to cemented down a couple of years ago, I think that there's definitely a little bit of concern about what the future is. And then you still, you know, we get taught a lesson every day about young guys, and it's, you know, Davis Schneider might be a part of the core. He might not be. I'm sure everyone would have signed up last year, and I'm sure a lot of people are on the fence right now. And so it's hard to know with guys like Schneider, Clement, even Horwitz, who's absolutely raked, because, you know, there's just so much more to be put in front of them.
Ben, that feels like a perfectly good segue to the trade deadline this year and you know, the many questions surrounding it. What are your expectations for the Blue Jays at the deadline?
I expect the Blue Jays to sell, and I would expect it to be more with an eye toward retooling than full rebuilding. I would be surprised if either Vlad or Bo got traded, to be honest, not just both, but if either get traded, I would personally be a little bit shocked. I think that they'll move a lot of the unrestricted free agents, or if not all the unrestricted free agents. And we kind of saw them starting to try to do that with the Kevin Kiermaier wave move recently. I think that they have, you know, three or four position players, three or four relievers and a starter that are easy UFA trades. I think that, that they might look into some of their one and a half guys, like some of their guys that will be a free agent after next year, not including Vlad and Bo, but I'd be surprised. You know, someone does have to cover innings for them. If they're going to trade a Chris Bassett, they need to get someone back who can start in their rotation the day after. They have to have someone fill those innings. And then guys like Jordan Romano, you know, he got hurt, so it's unlikely that he'd get dealt. So I think a lot of moves happen, but maybe not the biggest moves that people are asking for.
We're chatting with Ben Schulman, Blue Jays radio play-by-play voice for the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben, you know, when you talk about the future of this team, and you laid out some, I think, pretty likely scenarios when it comes to selling a lot of the UFAs, it's probably the way to go going forward. You know, I just think about, I mean, the Kevin Kiermaier situation is a tough one, because I think in his relatively short period of time as a Blue Jay, he has, I think, become maybe a fan favorite is a strong word, but he's definitely become a guy who people have taken to, which is kind of funny, right? After his like being like public enemy number one for so many years with the Rays, essentially. But he and a lot of these guys are probably not going to be Jays going forward. If guys have to take their place, I mean, you talked about the rotation. If they're going to trade a Bassett, for example, they have to have guys fill innings for them. But I mean, from a position player standpoint, we talked about Horwitz and Schneider and these guys. If let's say you do see a Turner gone and a Kiermaier gone, like how confident are you in the play of guys, let's say a Leo Jimenez, for example, if they're going to be playing a little bit more? Or I mean, IKF's on the IL, he's going to come back and he has played well. But when it comes to younger guys, we perhaps have only seen a limited sample size from. How do you feel about guys like that? Like for me, Leo Jimenez, I don't know if he's like an everyday guy, but I think he's proven to be a major leaguer.
Confidence that I have in them to hold their own or confidence to go and win games?
Maybe hold their own, because I'm not sure how many games the Jays are guaranteed to win in the second half.
Yeah, that was where I was going to draw the line. I like a lot of the guys they've brought up. It doesn't help your prospect rankings, and Leo is a bad example for this, but they do have some experience, frankly, with some of these guys, especially like the Horwitzes, but even the Stuart Burrows have been around pro baseball for a while now. So I think they have a lot of guys who will hold their own. Are they going to win more? I don't think so. Probably win less if they end up selling off a lot of parts. But when you look at some of those position players, they tended to have got a lot of these strike zone controlling guys between a Horwitz. You know, when Schneider's going great, he's walking a lot. Jimenez is certainly one of those guys. And Barreau can get on base a fair amount himself. So I think that they have these guys that translate a little bit more easily. Are their ceilings the highest on all of them? Probably not. But I think you can see, you know, controlling the strike zone and getting good pitches to hit to a certain extent is the same thing no matter where you play. Obviously, the pitches are tougher and they're faster and they move more. But the idea of controlling the strike zone and the decisions you make on pitches to swing at and not to swing at is all in your control and has nothing to do with the pitcher technically. So I like their guys holding their own. I think they have some interesting pieces. And if that does happen, it will be great for their development. The Blue Jays haven't in a long time, probably since Vlad, Bo, and Biggio were up in 19, really, have they had a August or September where they get to run a bunch of guys out there and see what they have. You don't want to be in that scenario, but if you are, there are at least some fun outcomes.
Ben, that kind of leads us to the next question here. I was going to ask you for a second half look ahead, but considering where we are and what the trade deadline may or may not hold, I felt like that would be too difficult of a question to answer. However, Sho and I were speaking a little bit in the first segment about things that we are looking forward to, right? Maybe some of the stuff that can make this second half a more positive one, or at least an exciting one for the Blue Jays. And so I wanted to extend that same question to you. Is there anything that you're looking forward to observing around this team, even if it ends up selling at the deadline and, you know, falling out of contention as it seems to be the case right now?
So this is post-deadline, I suppose, Jules.
Correct. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think there's still a lot to look forward to. I mean, it starts with some of the guys we were just talking about. You know, I really want to see what Spencer Horwitz keeps doing when you get a little bit more of a sample under his belt. But obviously through 32 games, he's been phenomenal. Could say the same to an even higher degree for Jimenez in terms of small sample, because he's only played 8 games, but he's been fun to watch. So I think watching guys like that and seeing who else might come up, whether it's a Gabriel Cancel or someone else from AAA, to see what they have, I think that'll be a lot of fun. When I look toward the starting rotation, my easy number one guy to watch in the second half is Yariel Rodriguez right now. It's incredible recency bias, but his last couple starts have been really exciting. I think that he's someone, you know, obviously his most recent start at Arizona wasn't his best, but he is someone that seems to be developing even in the 8 starts we've seen him in. As he goes on, seems to be kind of figuring it out at the major league level, which is really difficult to do, even if you're an experienced international pitcher. So, that's one guy I look at there. And then it's hard to know with the bullpen, because who knows who's going to be in the bullpen. But, you know, they found a guy like Brendan Little, who seems to be pretty solid for them. And if they do end up selling, they're going to be searching for lots of other guys, whether it's the minors or whether it's, you know, guys that are on waivers entirely. You can't waiver trade anymore, but if a guy's released, they could sign guys and pick them up. So seeing some of these guys pitch in even higher leverage situations, I mean, it's just tossing them into the deep end, and they've had that plenty already this year with the injuries. And if they trade guys, it'll be even more of that. So I think that there are some exciting storylines to look at in the second half. You just focus probably a little bit more on individuals than necessarily the record of the team, obviously.
Yeah, when it comes to the bullpen, you mentioned Brendan Little, and I think there's something there with Ryan Burr as well. I think I'm not sure he's ever going to be like the highest leverage guy they're throwing out there, but I've been relatively impressed, kind of like along the same lines of what you said for Brendan Little in terms of finding a guy. And I think that's there are building blocks in terms, even if they're like the teeniest, tiniest ones, even if they are only for 2024 or maybe for a small part of 2025. But I do look forward to those aspects. And I agree on Y-Rod, by the way. I think I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got, whether he's the four starter, the five starter, however it looks for him going forward. It is the All-Star break, Ben. And the All-Star break comes with the Derby tonight, the game tomorrow. I got to say, I've said this before a number of times on a variety of different shows, but I think like over time, All-Star events across sport, even if you just limited it to North American sports, the four major sports, I used to be a pretty big slam dunk contest guy. I loved the slam dunk contest, or I should say I loved the slam dunk contest. And I think all the dunks that can be done have been done, Ben. I think that's where I'm at on the dunk contest. But the Home Run Derby, because of that, it almost seems to exist as something that it seems so pure. Maybe it's just because it's guys hitting balls as far as they humanly possibly can. I think for that reason, it has now become my favorite all-star event across any sport. I'm curious where you fall on the Derby these days, because they've actually changed the format. We're going to talk about the Derby a little bit later on in the show towards the end, make our picks certainly, but I got to say the field looks pretty good this year, and that they changed the format to be unseeded, I kind of like it, I got to say.
Yeah, I will say, first off, I totally agree with you. I was probably slightly Derby over dunk contest before, which I think is the big combination there, and or the big battle. And I'm all in on the Derby. I mean, it's, you know, they'll make changes to the format slightly. They'll make changes to how outs are recorded and how they're, or swings are recorded and how they're not. But they haven't touched the main thing, which is the same with the dunk contest. It's just guys hitting huge bombs, like you mentioned, and everyone likes watching that. That's about as fun as it gets. So I will miss, I think, a little bit of the head-to-head aspect, although I understand. I mean, a guy like Vlad, or last year with Julio, is part of a reason to avoid that, is Vlad spent himself early on in the 19 Derby, and Julio spent himself early on setting a record last year, only to lose to Vlad in the second round. And so I think, you know, it kind of makes it more fair, but maybe discourages some guys from going nuts, because you might have this huge battle where, you know, Jock Peterson hits 35 and now you got to hit 36 or something like that. Now it's not going to be like that, as far as I'm aware. But it's, like you said, it's a great field. I mean, you got Ozuna, Ramirez, Henderson, Witt, Alonso, Teoscar, and more, and it's, you know, it's going to be a really fun event. I kind of feel like Pete Alonso is going to win his third home run derby because he understands the competition, but there are a bunch of contenders in there, and that's the best part too, I think, as opposed to a dunk contest. You know, do we have Aaron Judge or Shohei in there? No, but I think that baseball typically gets to see a lot of its best players in the home run derby, which is a lot of fun.
Is Pete Alonso your official pick?
Right,
that's your official pick?
I will
pick.
Make Pete Alonso my
okay
pick.
All right.
Yeah, I was going to ask, Ben, you and I did this show together last year, and one of the most fun parts of it, in my mind, was, you know, our bracket, our home run derby bracket. I do believe we were both terribly wrong in the end.
Yeah, neither of us picked Vlad, I'll tell you that. We definitely did not pick. I might have picked Mookie Betts to beat Vlad, I think.
Right on. I think you did.
In the final?
No, in the first round.
Oh, the first round.
Yeah.
And he killed him. Mookie got the worst score of any.
Boy.
It's okay. No one holds that against you or anything like that. But I am wondering if you could elaborate on your Pete Alonso pick, or if this is basically just out of feel.
It's mostly that I think the home run derby is a bit more specific than just hitting homers. Like, I think there is a strategy to it, and how to just barely hit a homer and how to pace yourself. And Pete's won it twice. I mean, he's one of only three back-to-back Derby champs ever, I believe. So now he won it back-to-back in 19 and 21, which was a little awkward. But, you know, I think that Alonso probably gets forgotten about a little bit at times, at least around here with him being in the National League. And he's just kind of consistent all the time doing what he does, and what he does is hit homers. So I like Alonso, but, you know, Gunnar Henderson could go hit a million homers. So could Bobby Witt or Marcelo Zuna, or heck, Teoscar might win the whole thing. So it is a really fun field, but that's why I'd go Alonso.
Well, Ben, when we speak of consistency, you are at the top of my list. So thank you for doing this. You're the man. I will see you when the second half begins, I guess, in a couple of days. So enjoy the time off, and we'll talk soon. Enjoy the Derby.
Thanks so much. Hope to see you both soon, and enjoy the rest of the show.
There he goes. That's Ben Schulman, Blue Jays radio play-by-play voice for the Sportsnet Radio Network. You'll see him on TV. Sportsnet TV will loan him to our TV friends in the not-too-distant future as well. Yeah, if Pete Alonso wins, Jules, he will become just the second person to win the Home Run Derby three times. The other guy, some guy named Ken Griffey Jr. So there you go. I know, like,
that's
it's
a
not
good pick.
I know it's not like it doesn't really matter who wins the Home Run Derby. Like, no, but it is fun. It is still really fun. I think the All-Star week, like the week of festivities, generally speaking, I'm a cynic in that I believe that it's, while it is for the fans, you know, it's like there's a marketing aspect of it, a sponsorship aspect to it as well. But it's also about growing the game and getting as many casual eyeballs, one, and young eyeballs, two. And I think for that reason, the Derby does a great job of exposing some of the game's most exciting players to a wide variety of people who probably are not like going out of their way to watch like Pete Alonso on a nightly basis if they're not Mets fans, or like if you're not a Dodgers fan. Maybe, okay, the Dodgers are a bad example because they're a very popular team. But like the Gunnar Henderson, like how many people are going out of their way to watch the Orioles?
For sure.
Where Gunnar Henderson is like an all-world talent, and he's like 22 or 23, will probably win an MVP at some point in his career, right? So getting your chance to see a Bobby Witt Jr. or a Gunnar Henderson or a Jose Ramirez in these quote-unquote smaller markets, I think, can only be a good thing.
I mean, one of the best parts of the Derby last year, even though it didn't really amount to much, was Adley Rutschman swinging from both sides.
That was
of the plate,
cool.
Right? There's so many of those little moments, and it's not just the Derby. It's the fact that these guys also get to show some personality when they're there. Yeah. You know, the broadcast goes above and beyond to mic those guys up, to have someone, to have a player doing post-Derby or post-game interviews and things of the sort.
Mid-game interviews, basically.
Yes, and all of that, you're right, helps grow the game, and which is one of the biggest objectives of an All-Star week, such as what MLB puts together. And it's fun for the players, Joe.
It is fun.
You can see that the guys are having fun, and it's a chance to connect with maybe old teammates or friends that you don't see because, you know, you're on opposite sides of the country playing in different leagues and all of that. I think we only have to gain, the sport only has to gain for continuing along with that and really expanding it and growing as we have seen in recent years.
Like, last year when Vladdy won, you got to see, because the All-Star game last year was in Seattle.
Yes.
And you got to see Teoscar Hernandez, with the time played for the Mariners, kind of like give Vladdy some encouragement. He was there for his pal. They're clearly still friends. I don't think this is like a shock to anyone. They're good pals. I would be stunned if Vladdy is not there doing the exact same thing for Teoscar Hernandez later tonight. Like, I would actually be genuinely shocked if you don't see at some point on Sportsnet, you don't see a shot of Vladdy with his backwards baseball cap going up and dapping up Teo at some point. Like, I would be shocked if he doesn't do that.
And if Teo wins, can you imagine, you know, an ice bucket shower after all these years of not being teammates anymore? It could happen. It could be a little bit of a look back in the past of when they were Blue Jays teammates. So I don't know. There's some emotional strings to be pulled here as well.
I think that the All-Star break is going to be a lot of fun. Certainly the events tonight, the events tomorrow with the actual game itself. But I do think that, I mean, the Euros are now over. Copa is now over. The Olympics have not yet started. So you have this very narrow window in which you have all eyes on the baseball community, essentially. And I think this is going to, I mean, it's obviously done on purpose, but at the same time, they have this very, very good chance as to make sure everyone is looking at your sport. And again, I think it's a great place to start tonight.
This is going to be, I'm loving that we are going to get our picks in, you and me.
Yes.
Because can't wait to see how wrong we are later on.
That's usually the case. That's usually the case. We'll do our picks for the Home Run Derby at the bottom of the next hour. Straight ahead, Jeff Ponce, prospect writer and analyst for Baseball America. Get to know Trey Yesavage and Cal Steven as well. More to come on Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour 2 of Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network, also on Sportsnet 360. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you until the top of the next hour. Appreciate you all being with us. Hope you're having a good start to your All-Star break. Always fun when we get to chat some Derby, which we'll make our picks for, Jules, in the next segment. Very excited to make my pick. Excited to watch the Derby later tonight and the All-Star game tomorrow. But of course, it continues today. The MLB draft got started last night. We got through two rounds. I believe rounds 3 through 10 will go later today. And to help us break down what went on for the Blue Jays and take a look around the rest of Major League Baseball, we have Jeff Ponce joining us from Baseball America, prospect writer and analyst. Jeff, how are you this morning?
Doing good, show. How are you guys? Happy to be on.
Yeah, we are doing great. We appreciate you carving out some time for us. Thank you so much. Well, I won't pretend to be a prospect expert. That's why we have someone much more educated about this like you joining us here. Tell me everything there is to know about Trey Yesavage. I need to know everything. Like what kind of cereal he likes. How his wake up routine. No, I need to know everything there is to know about this guy. The Blue Jays take him 20th overall out of East Carolina. When I look at some of the highlights, and again, that's all I'm basing this on, but pretty nice fastball movement, pretty durable guy, throws lots of strikes. Like, what do you see out of Yesavage?
Yeah, as for the cereal, I hear he has a collection, a variety of cereals. You know, some days he's a marshmallow guy, other days he's feeling the Wheaties, breaking in the Raisin brand, etc. There might be some stuff in Canada that he's going to try that hasn't tried before, so we'll see there. But this is one of my favorite pitchers in the draft. I chatted with some of the folks in the front office last night, including Chris Curtis, who's the Northeast cross checker and covers that area. And they were ecstatic about this pick. This was somebody that they had on their board a little bit higher in the first round. I think, you know, we had him ranked 11th overall. We had a mock to the Red Sox at 12. I would say in terms of pitchability and starter's traits, he was probably the most complete pitcher in the draft in that sense. Certainly, you know, Chase Burns has bigger stuff. Hagen Smith being a left-hander with bigger stuff is really unique. But I think you look at Trey Yesavage's body of work at East Carolina, and while it's not an SEC or an ACC school, one of the best mid-majors in the country, if not sort of the most successful mid-majors in the country, and one that's produced a fair amount of top pitching prospects over the last couple of years. Gavin Williams a few years ago, who's now with the Cleveland Guardians in their rotation. Carson Wisenhunt, who had some stuff his last year, but and left ECU, but was one of their products, was, you know, a pretty high pick for the Giants. And I think Yesavage has a chance to be the best pitcher that's come out of this program over the last few years. This is a guy that has, you know, we talk about, you know, pitch metric. We talk about movement a lot over the last couple of years. This guy has elite ride. When I put a comp on him coming into the draft, we sort of did the top three pitchers and put different comps on him. I put a Justin Verlander comp on him. It's a higher release like Verlander. He gets behind the ball. It creates an elite amount of ride. The numbers that we see in college are a little, typically a little juiced. What he was averaging in terms of what we get for data is 22 inches. I would imagine once he gets onto a Hawkeye device, it's going to be more like 18 or 19. 18 or 19 inches, you're within that Verlander, Garrett Cole sort of range for someone that can really ride it at the top of the zone. And then beyond that, you know, he's got a variety of other pitches. He's got a gyro slider that he throws for strikes. He's got a curveball that will flash that has some depth as well. I like the off speed as well. I think his secondaries are going to eat. There's been some questions about, you know, his extension. He's sort of a short strider. So just in terms of like where some of the knocks on him were there, has sort of a weird injury where he had a collapsed lung due to a regimen that he had during his training, missed a start, but then came back, and pitched for them in the regionals. He's a really interesting pitcher. I think the Blue Jays are ecstatic this guy dropped down to 20. In fact, I know they are. And he's probably not going to pitch this year. You know, that's typically pretty prudent with someone that's had as many innings, has pitched as many innings as Yesavage has over the last couple of years. But yeah, I think that this is arguably, you know, the most complete starter in the draft. And I think if you look at what the Blue Jays have done well over the last couple of years, it's later round high skill sort of college bats, a guy like, you know, Spencer Horowitz, for example, but it's also guys like this. They've done a really good job with pitching. Injuries have been unfortunate within the organization. There is some injury concern. I know there was some talk and some smoke around, you know, potentially some concerns with his back. But if you look at the track record, you know, outside of sort of a freak incident that happened, like I said, you know, due to his trainer, he's been there. He's been on the mound. He's been one of the most consistent guys, highly decorated, was a collegiate national team member. So there's a lot to like here. And, you know, I think that this is one of the better values in the first round.
Well, you mentioned value and, you know, you mentioned he was ranked, what, I think you said 11th on Baseball America's rankings. Yes. And I think that's interesting because you also mentioned the injury concerns, which I know you said are things maybe you can look past, but I mean, he was drafted a little bit lower than expected. Is that simply due to those injury concerns? Because this is a conversation I think we have a lot for all kinds of drafts, not just baseball. It's like, oh, so-and-so was a top 10 talent, so-and-so was a top 5 talent, but they ended up going much lower. And I sometimes wonder why that is. But I wonder in your estimation, Jeff, is that an injury thing or is it just teams are operating out of an abundance of caution maybe?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a variety of things. I think certainly the injury was something that probably, well, not an injury, but some of the concerns in the medicals probably right. Was something that pushed him down a little bit. We hear a lot of smoke around a lot of things, the 3 or 4 days leading up to the draft. All of a sudden, the 6 months before that, we're doing all this reporting and all this information just sort of drops in our lap for 3 to 4 days. And we had a feeling that Yesevich could drop a little bit. I think, you know, if we'd mocked it out maybe 2-3 weeks ago, we thought this guy was going inside of the top 10. Another part of it could just simply be a bad fit for an organization. You know, a lot of these guys under front offices understand that they're shopping sort of for their player development. They're shopping for what they're good at in terms of their organization. Not everybody necessarily is that self-aware in terms of the front office. Some teams think they can take any kind of player and make them good. I don't think that's necessarily the case. So it could have been some concerns there. And I think, you know, there might be a variety of evaluations, especially with pitchers. You know, we'll often see one scout say, hey, I think this guy could be a number two. And someone else is like, I think it's more like a back end number four, number five. And I think we had similar conversations when it came to Yesevich around that. So, you know, I don't think it was all the injury. I think some of it was fit. Some of it is also money. The MLB draft is different than True. The NBA draft and the NFL draft, where you're typically taking the best player available and you're not concerned about the money because those picks are slotted. They're slotted here, but with the bonus pool, you can move some of that money around the board. There were definitely teams that I think took some underslotted deals between 10 and 20. So some of those guys probably, even on draft boards, weren't necessarily ahead of Yesevich. But I think on the other side of it, you know, the money might have been an issue too. Like, I don't know specifically what his dollars were. We'll find more about that in probably the next couple of hours to weeks, depending upon how long the negotiations go there. So, you know, I think there's another element to the MLB draft that's maybe a little bit foreign to those that are fans of the NFL, those that are fans of the NBA, or even the NHL.
Hey, Jeff, thank you for doing this. Looking at what the Blue Jays did on day one here, beyond their first pick, it's very clear that they're prioritizing pitching and maybe pitching that can come up a little bit sooner rather than later, right? Taking those college guys and whatnot. Looking at their farm system, and not only their farm system, but also their major league roster right now, what do you make of that strategy and maybe, you know, the team's need for a strategy like that right now?
Yeah, I think... The organization, like I said before, has been sort of unfortunate this year in terms of the amount of pitching injuries that we've seen. I mean, we even saw some over the last week with, you know, Ricky potentially going down again. You know, Tiedemann, obviously that's a concern. You know, I think that we're entering an age where, regardless of what sort of the medicals say, any of these pitchers, regardless of how healthy they are as amateurs, you know, it's one pitch away from dealing with a potential injury and then missing significant time. You know, we saw that earlier this year with a guy like Landon Marudis, who was a really exciting player in spring training, someone who really popped for me, was moving up their board in terms of their top 30 rankings. And, you know, in the end, got injured pretty early in the season and is now going to miss the rest of this year and a good chunk of next year. So I think it was important for them to sort of build that pitching depth. They've done well within this college area. And they got two guys that had some of the more unique fastball traits in the draft. You know, Cal Steven, who they got out of Mississippi State at pick 59, is another guy that can really ride the fastball with some velocity. So I think that one's really interesting. I think you also can look at the bodies of these two guys, both sort of prototypical pitcher build, 6'4", you know, 215, 225 pounds, somewhere in that range, which is, you know, a bigger guy who's probably going to be able to, you know, eat a fair amount of innings. Blue Jays, I think, have done a good job in terms of pitching development. They've had success, particularly last year when we sort of studied at the end of the season traits and success. They were an organization that ranked within our top 10 in terms of pitching development. So I think it goes a little unnoticed at times, but, you know, I do think that they went and they got some higher sort of profile pitchers here that weren't from the high school set, which is a little bit less risky. So this was a little bit safer for them. And you know, I know that they're really excited that Yastavage obviously dropped to 20 for them.
We're chatting with Jeff Ponce, prospect writer and analyst from Baseball America. You can often find him on the minor league baseball beat as well. You mentioned Cal Steven, Jeff, and 59th overall, second round pick, Mississippi State pitcher. I saw some comparisons. Like, you made the comparisons for Yastavage to I think it was Garrett Cole and Justin Verlander more than anyone else. I've seen some comparisons for Steven being made to Jeff Samardzija. I heard someone make a comparison to Chris Paddock. So, I mean, like, these are guys who are major league pitchers who have performed pretty well over the course of their years. Maybe like high floor type of player, back end rotation. Is that what you foresee for Cal Steven?
Yeah, I think back end of the rotation, there's even an opportunity that, you know, maybe he's a good reliever in shorter stints, maybe finds more velocity, can play there. And I think when we're looking at the draft, and I know it's like, hey, you know, he just mentioned a potential reliever. If it's a major league piece and it's a guy who, you know, gets 6 to 7 plus years of major league service time, that's a win in the second round.
Yeah.
You know, and I think people don't necessarily comprehend that, but what it brings to the table is sort of a higher floor where, you know, that there's multiple roles that this guy could potentially fit into. And there's a lot of times, I mean, we're seeing it right now with, you know, statistically the best pitcher in baseball and Garrett Crochet with the White Sox, and a guy that, you know, that potentially could get moved here at the deadline, of course. But a guy that started out and sort of cut his teeth in relief and was then able to sort of transition into the rotation. And I think, you know, for a lot of these guys, it's just about getting up to the major league level. There's a lot of development for pitchers that happens at that level versus hitters, where, you know, there's certainly adjustments that happen with pitchers, but I mean, with hitters, but I think you look at sort of that initial sort of touchdown with pitchers, it's not always clean. It's typically pretty rocky, frankly. I mean, you can even look at a future Hall of Famer, like a guy like Clayton Kershaw, who had a 5-something ERA in his first season in the major leagues. And I think that's pretty consistent. You know, these guys sort of have to learn that there's certain things that they can't get away with at the major league level. But I think you look at both of these guys and you sort of see future major leaguers, whether it's in a variety of roles. I think, you know, Yastavage is probably a guy that's more likely to be a starter. He just has too many traits. He throws too many strikes. He gets too deep into games. Where Steven is a guy that, you know, initially when he was at Purdue his freshman year was like their relief ace, then moved to the rotation and then transferred to the SEC. You know, I think it's an interesting comp when you bring up Chris Paddock, because he is a right-hander, you know, who's change up first in terms of his secondary. There's always a little concern there. You know, you do want a guy that has a breaking ball, especially as a right-hander. He's going to see a lot of right-handed bats. You know, typically guys don't throw their changeup in same-handed matchups. It's a pretty good changeup. He can sneak it in there. I think the biggest concern for him is probably just that breaking ball development. If he can develop, you know, an average breaking ball that he can get swings and misses with, he can throw consistently for strikes, that's a guy that all of a sudden does start to project more as a starter long-term. But it is probably more of a number 4, number 5. But once again, getting a rotation piece, especially, you know, if you plan to compete in the future, that's big. And I think we're seeing now that teams need 6, 7, maybe even 8 potential, you know, major league starters that can give you 100 or more innings, just based on the rash of injuries that we've seen over the last couple of years when it comes to pitchers.
Yeah, we're certainly seeing that with the Blue Jays right now, and a lot of uncertainty around their rotation. Jeff, this is maybe more of a general Blue Jays farm system question for you, but this isn't necessarily a prospect pool that's super highly ranked, and that would make sense. Obviously, they've been all in on contending for a couple of years now, and that means subtracting from the farm. But as we look ahead, and you know, there's still, we're not entirely sure what will happen post deadline or post All-Star break for this team. But how much can a team actually improve its farm system through the draft and through the current model of the MLB draft?
Yeah. You know, I think teams obviously can help themselves a lot in the draft. I think you're looking at a guy in Yesovich who's probably going to rank either 1 or 2 in this system, the latest 3. Was kind of thinking about that last night. The thing for him is you kind of have 2 guys ahead of him right now that have some question marks, and Ricky Tiedemann, who's just really not been healthy since July of 2022, it seems. I mean, we really haven't seen a stretch where he's gone 5 or 6 innings consistently outside of those 4 starts in the Arizona Fall League last year. You look at Orelvis Martinez, which was a great story, somebody who really sort of took a massive step forward in terms of, you know, what his skills were at the plate in 2023. He carried that over to 2024, gets called up. It was a great story. And then a few days later, obviously the PED suspension hits. So, you know, it's an organization where there's been some bad luck in terms of injuries. So some of these guys that, you know, potentially could rank higher have kind of tumbled down boards. They've had some big arm injuries with some of their younger, more talented arms, and guys like Marutis, guys like Barriera, et cetera. I mean, really, if you look down their board, almost all of their guys seem to have some sort of injury. Adam Macca was another guy that they had acquired from Seattle a few years ago. He's now dealing with an injury and hit the IL. Ryan Jennings, I believe, hit the IL. He was another guy that was moving big up our boards. So it's just been an unfortunate rash of injuries. That being said, I think, you know, depending upon how things shake out here over the next couple of weeks, you know, hopefully Vlad Guerrero Jr. stays with the organization. My son is a huge Blue Jays fan and a huge Vlad fan. So I think we're praying that he still stays with the team. I think that's the face of the franchise. But, you know, if we do see one of those guys move, Bo Bichette, some of these other pieces on this team, we could be looking at a very different top 30 here in the next couple of weeks. And I think that's interesting for Blue Jays fans because I think this team is still good enough. There's still some core pieces depending on who they trade and what direction they go. They've been a player in free agency. You know, obviously they were down to the last sort of minute here in the Ohtani sweepstakes this year. So they're going to go out and make moves. They've been an aggressive front office. If they're able to sort of, you know, backfill a little bit with some more talent in the organization, some players that, you know, project as everyday players and guys that could potentially be up with a major league team later in 2025, early in 2026, you start to look a little bit better. It also can sort of feed the trade deadline next year. If you find yourself in a better situation, you get better luck with injuries, better luck with how things shake out, because I don't think anybody came into the season expecting the Blue Jays not to be in the mix in the AL East, and that's just unfortunately been the case. You know, we'll say trading Bichette, for example, they could get back, you know, 3 pretty decent prospects. We'll say somewhere in that, you know, top 200 range, maybe 1 or 2 top 100 guys. It could be a high-end player as well. It's just some of the teams are going to want to acquire, and they're going to get an extra year of control as well. So it's sort of the right time to trade. The organization's top 30 could look very different in a few weeks, which is going to be a lot of work for me, but I welcome it, getting you know, some more exciting players. And I think the thing that the Blue Jays do have is they don't have a lot of high-end guys after 1 or 2 or 3 now. But they have a lot of decent players all the way down the board. There's decent depth. There's a lot of rotation, a lot of potential relief pieces. You know, they've had and been able to produce players like Davis Schneider and Spencer Horowitz from, you know, lower pedigree sort of backgrounds, later round picks, guys that, you know, people don't necessarily expect to turn into major leaguers. And, you know, we've seen both those guys over the last couple of years really contribute in a big way to the big club.
Jeff, before we let you scoot, we appreciate you being generous with your time for us. I did want to go off the Blue Jays for just one second here. The Phillies in the first round at 27 overall took out of Toronto Dante Norrie, a Canadian outfielder, born and raised here, or at least born here. And, you know, I was hoping, you know, as a Toronto-born guy myself, I was hoping he would be available for the Blue Jays. I had seen a lot of rankings, interestingly, had Norrie as like a, you know, in the 50s in terms of where he was going to get picked, and he got taken by the Phillies in the first round. Were you surprised? Like, I'm genuinely wondering, like, when it comes to Canadians, I always try and pay attention to as many Canadians as possible. The Rays took one as well. But I wonder what you see when you look at Dante Norrie that makes you believe the Phillies did the right thing in unanimously taking Dante Norrie in the first round.
Yeah, you know, Michigan high school guy, but obviously a Canadian native, as you mentioned. That was probably the biggest surprise of the first round. We're often getting the picks before they're announced, just sort of through back channels, right, ourselves. And this was the pick that I think I had three different picks in a matter of a minute. I heard that it was Walker Yannick. And then I had heard that it was Brody Brecht, who went to the Rockies a little bit later. And then it was sort of Norrie, and it was confirmed that, yes, it is indeed Norrie. And I think that was probably the biggest shock of the first round. Now, that being said, he's a little bit older. He's 20 years old. So for some teams, an older high school guy sort of tumbles down the board a little bit. But he's got a really interesting background, you know, was a high level player, obviously. And, you know, I think Michigan maybe goes unnoticed as, you know, a hotbed of talent, but we've seen a lot of players come out of Michigan over the last couple of years. A few years ago, Orchard Lake St. Mary's was the top team for 2 years. I think they didn't lose a single game. And they produced a handful of, you know, I think picks next year. Alex Mooney, who's now with the Guardians, has been a pretty good pick himself after a good career at Duke. And then Brock Porter and then several others. So, you know, he's coming from sort of a really good competitive prep background. Like I said, he's a little bit older. So that can scare off some teams, but I think you look at the tools here, you know, you look at the fact that he's a left-handed hitting outfielder, teams look for that as well. It was a Mississippi State commit, so it was a high level commit, you know, and also has a big background in terms of, you know, his family being involved in sports. His grandfather, Fred Norrie, recruited Kyle Schwarber to Indiana when he was an assistant coach. His father, Micah, is a longtime NBA assistant with the Minnesota Timberwolves. So he's somebody that's been around, you know, professional players, and I think is just, you know, ready to sort of make this jump. It's a really interesting pick. It was sort of the shock of the first round, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, a few years back, Xavier Isaac of the Rays was the shock of the first round. We were sitting here in LA, and Xavier Isaac is probably a player that would go within the top 10 to 15 picks now if we redrafted that draft 2 years later. Guy that played in the futures game and has been moving up our top 100. So, that's certainly, you know, just the fact that he's a surprise pick doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad pick. It just means that us in the public space maybe don't know some of the things that folks in front offices do. But it was one of the more shocking picks in the first round.
Hey, that's the beauty of drafting, right? That's kind of the fun, the chaotic aspect of it, but also the fun aspect, I would say, of it, Jeff. You guys at Baseball America do a phenomenal job. I love reading your resources. You are a great resource for us. Thank you for doing this, and we'll chat later on and enjoy the rest of the draft.
Yeah, thanks. Let's hope we get some more exciting players to Toronto.
Absolutely. There he goes. Jeff Ponce, baseball prospect writer for Baseball America. So great of him to join us to break down Trey Yesevich. I have to make sure we get that correct, Jules, as he becomes a highly ranked member of the system.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
I'm sure we'll get a chance to ask him.
I think so. Yes, I do think so. I got to say that I brought up Dante Norrie with Jeff just because, like I said, Toronto born. He mentioned his father, Micah Norrie. He is a longtime Timberwolves assistant coach, but he was actually a staffer with the Raptors for a very long time. I think he was an intern dating back to like 1998. And then he was an assistant coach under Jay Triano. So this is usually more up Blake's wheelhouse. I will admit, but I do think when I saw that, I thought, gosh, please be there. Please be there for the Jays. As out of pure self-interest. But hey, I'm happy for the guy. Happy for any Canadians taken. I believe the Rays also took Emilien Pitre. I don't want to mispronounce his name. It was a very French name. He's from Quebec. But two Canadians going
that
so far
beautiful.
On the first day.
Good job.
Thank you.
And I like that, you know, Blake is still with us. Even though he's not here, we were able to sneak in some Raptors and talk a little bit, you know, keep it in his wheelhouse for sure.
I'm sure wherever he is smiling. I'm sure even if he's not watching, he probably felt it's like the opposite of like a shiver rolling down your spine. You know what I mean? It's like the positive version of that. I am very much looking forward to seeing what continues for the Blue Jays at the Major League Baseball draft. I believe again rounds 3 through 10 go today, and then there are 20 rounds now. It's crazy to imagine a world, Jules, where not so long ago the Major League Baseball draft was 40 rounds.
Seriously, that is a lot of rounds. That's a lot of people. Exactly. Yeah, I believe that this model works a little bit better, show, for what we're trying to build with the sport here.
Drafting is an inexact science. This is
sure
true.
Is.
But the Blue Jays, and Ben Nicholson-Smith had a great piece on sportsnet.ca about like the Jays' history in drafting and how it has not been great. But I do find it interesting that after taking some younger guys these last couple of years, they have, and you brought this up with Jeff, prioritized slightly older guys, right? Like both Trey Yasevich and Cal Steven, both college arms, whereas we had seen some prep school guys, some high school guys come out of academy guys come out of the draft in the last couple of years. So I'm wondering if that does signify some kind of tonal shift into how they are approaching things, maybe because they are, like we all are aware that the farm system is depleted of guys that can come up sooner rather than later. I mean, most prospects who get drafted are not playing for a couple of years anyways, but knowing that, I do wonder if that changes the philosophy somewhat.
Yeah, certainly. When you select a college pitcher, whether he will come up as a starter or as a reliever, there are obviously questions to be answered within development, and that is why, you know, the minor league system exists. But it is clear that the Blue Jays are prioritizing something a little bit more short-term than, say, an Arjun Damala, who was their first-round pick last year and who has a ton of development ahead as a hitter.
18, 19 now, right?
Right on. So it's definitely different, right? And it kind of shows, it alludes a little bit to what Jeff said. This is a farm system that doesn't necessarily have a next man up right now when it comes to the pitching side, and the Blue Jays need to backfill on that front. We are seeing how much depth it truly takes to make it through a winning major league season. And we also saw how quickly the Blue Jays' depth just disappeared earlier this season. And so, you know, based on that, it seems like a smart strategy to pick up some guys that can help sooner rather than later at the major league level. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to, as Jeff Ponce was saying, to see once this draft is over how the system is reordered, because they've already graduated a lot of those prospects. Like, I mean, the way that the ranking systems work, especially when you look at like Baseball America, MLB Pipeline, ESPN, the variety of sources you have at your disposal, you know, most of those systems, even for teams that did graduate prospects already, like the Blue Jays, like Spencer Horwitz and David Schneider and Leo Jimenez, might still actually be on many prospect lists. So if you're not counting the guys who are actually playing games for the major league club right now, I mean, I wonder what that leaves in the minor league system. So I'm curious to see what that, how that changes, and what kind of players enter the system over these next couple of days. But we do appreciate Jeff Ponce and his great information, great stuff learning about Trey Yasevich and Cal Steven, 20th overall and 59th overall, respectively. Let's take a quick break. And on the other side, home run derby time. We'll get your picks. Look at your, Jules, the pick for you, certainly my pick. Look at the odds for everyone. Teoscar Hernandez, oddly low or high odds, I suppose. Not the most favored guy to win the home run derby. Maybe he'll be one of our picks to win the derby tonight. Still lots to come on the other side. You're listening and watching Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus, final segment of the program here on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you until the top of the hour. Our thanks to our guests, Ben Shulman and Jeff Ponce, both joining us over the course of the show. Jules, always fun to hear from those guys. Ben, certainly with the look ahead to the second half of the season. He got his Pete Alonso Derby pick in as well. And Jeff Ponce with the deep dive on the two newest members of the Blue Jays prospect pool, Trey Yesevich and Cal Steven, both pitchers taken out of college. We have some clips as well on getting to know them a little bit better. Amateur scouting director Shane Farrell did speak to the media. It was a little later than I think we'd anticipated. I think the media, the guide I had gotten said he was going to talk around 7:30. And I don't even think the Blue Jays made their pick until like 8:30 Eastern yesterday. So Farrell had to stay up a little bit late. But here is a brief clip of amateur scouting director for the Blue Jays, Shane Farrell, talking about Trey Yesevich.
We're really excited to add Trey to the organization. You know, he's a big physical right-hand starter with 3 above average pitches. He's proven to be durable and held good workloads through his time at East Carolina. And he's shown, you know, the secondary pitches and fastball quality are really strong, and we're thrilled to be able to add him.
So there you go. That's the director of amateur scouting for the Blue Jays, Shane Farrell, talking to the media last night. And I mean, definitely, I think the fact that he emphasized, now look, all pitchers are durable until they're not, right? So I think that is always a caveat you have when you talk about any prospect. I would say, honestly, any prospect from any position in any sport, but certainly with pitchers. And I think the reason I emphasize it, Jules, is because, I mean, let's face it. I mean, Jeff laid it out for us in the previous segment. The Jays pitching prospects have not been particularly durable. Brandon Barriera has run into injuries. Ricky Tiedemann has only pitched a handful of innings this year and last year as well. Adam Macko ran into an injury pretty recently. You know, to say nothing of Alek Manoah, who not that long ago was a prospect himself. So I think that is something I find interesting to hear from. Having said that, you do want to, I mean, there's a long road between Yesevich being taken out of East Carolina and him like pitching for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, and obviously durability is always going to be something that we talk about when it comes to pitchers and their ability to stay healthy and stay on the field. But right. He is very prototypical, right? 6'4", 225 pounds, I want to say here. And he has at least 3 very good pitches that if he can keep on honing them, could play well at the major league level. And at the same time, he can keep developing here, right? The fastball is 93-95. He has a curveball. He has a slider. He has a splitter that needs some development, but that this is why the minor league system, again, exists. It's so guys can keep honing those skills. And all of 4 of those pitches can become, elite or at least above average when he makes a successful transition to MLB. So durability is certainly about, a guy's ability to stay healthy and stay on the field, but it is also, you know, how well does your stuff play? How consistently can you throw it? How deep can you go into games? And so this is probably what we're going to be looking at whenever Trey Yesevich comes up and makes his minor league debut, which, as Jeff said, probably won't be this year. The Blue Jays tend to be careful and work these guys out of the player development complex for the first little bit to make sure that everything is in place, to make sure that they get a feel for him and where he can go and how they can best develop him. But when he does reach the minor league level, wherever he starts, I think that these are things that we can watch. It's how well does this stuff actually play? What is the shape of the off-speed pitches like? And can this guy continue to go deep into games at a consistent level as a pro?
I think, too, when it comes to prospect analysis, when it comes to young guys like that, I mean, we brought this up with Jeff, too, but the simple idea of taking the best player available, and I mean, he was a guy ranked pretty highly. I think a lot of people said, and Jeff mentioned this as well, that he was the 3rd best pitcher on most boards, and he went 20th overall. So, and Farrell talked about this in the media availability from last night as well, but he also said that for them, Yesevich was actually the best player available on the board. So I think like a lot of people who are like, oh, okay, maybe we should draft a catcher, draft this kind of position player, draft a pitcher. I think the truth is, in the Major League Baseball draft, you kind of just got to draft the best player available, right? I mean, because you never really know what's happening with a lot of these guys, down the road, I mean, by the time they actually come up and play, the major league roster could look a whole lot different, right? Yeah. So I think that's why I'm always in favor of BPA. As we get to know Yesevich a little bit better, one more clip for you featuring MLB Network's Greg Amsinger talking to Trey himself immediately following the selection. So let's hear it. This is actually from the draft floor last night, courtesy of MLB Network.
I've heard that my splitter and my slider are my best pitch, and then I've heard that my fastball is pretty good too. I like all of them equally, and I got my curveball in there too, and yeah, I like all four of those pitches that I have.
Trey, I spoke with Coach Godwin. The first thing he said is you're a better human being than you are a pitcher. So that's pretty impressive right there. But he also pointed out your teammates voted you the hardest worker on your team. And to me, that work ethic probably put you in a position to win one of the most exciting games of the college baseball playoff. Walk us through a little bit that game against Wake Forest that was absolutely epic.
That game was very special to me. Coming off a collapsed lung injury and being able to be out on the field one last time with eight other of my brothers and the rest in the dugout. I would love to go back and relive that moment, but I mean, it all worked out on my side and I couldn't be more excited for where I'm at right now.
So that's Trey Yesevich speaking with MLB Network. I guess he was at home and the MLB Network crew live on the draft floor with the awesome music blasting in the background. It's always fun. That's so good. I love that kind of stuff. Apparently, the draft actually is taking place in where rodeos take place.
Right on.
Like they just kind of cleared the floor. Shai Davidi, who we'll talk to tomorrow, he'll join us tomorrow on Jays Talk Plus, who is out in Texas at the All-Star Game, taking in all sorts of festivities. But Shai promised that there would not be any copy written from him, like the Blue Jays really corralled a great prospect. And honestly, that he said that, I'm a little disappointed. I kind of want that. I don't know about you. I kind of actually, not that I want it. I need it, Julia.
Wait. Did Shai say that?
Yeah, he posted on social media that he promised not to engage in any, I guess, Texas or cattle based puns. Mm. But I think he has.
Did he give the example or was the example yours?
No, I gave that example.
Ah, okay. Because that would have been a nice workaround of like, I promise I won't do this.
But I'll do something else.
I don't know. I have to say I'm kind of with Shai on this one.
No,
you can sneak
come on.
One in
oh, okay,
there.
Just one? All
one.
Right, right.
And that's it. Otherwise it becomes
maybe that will be his, maybe he could get that as his lead. I don't know. We'll see what the editors for Shai on sportsnet.ca allow him to do. But no, good to hear from Trey Yesevich, who again, 20th overall out of East Carolina, talking to the MLB Network crew. We got a couple minutes left here, Jules. Let's talk some Derby. We did little bit with Ben, kinda, sorta, but I want to get your pick. And, you know, I look back to last year, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. put on a real show. I also, for what it's worth, I did not pick Vladdy either. But Vladdy did win, and it was a pretty fun derby. But this year, so the rules have actually changed. I mentioned this when we were chatting with Ben. So I'm going to read you the changed rules in case people were unclear as to how it worked.
That's great.
So they had a clock-based format that was introduced back in 2015, but the kind of ancillary rules that exist around it, I suppose, have changed. So last year, hitters were actually seeded. You were seeded like 1 through 8, and there was a bracket, and you mentioned you and Ben actually like filled out a bracket and kind of went through things, but there was a head-to-head matchups with this 1 through 8, and there were 3 rounds. In this year, 2024, once again, 3 rounds, but the 8-man field will not actually be seeded for the first round, but the one-on-one showdowns will return in the semis after you get past everyone hitting, like, I guess, for their first time. The top 4 hitters are reseeded 1 through 4 based on how many home runs they hit in the first round. If there's a tie, the player who hit the longest home run will advance. So I think that, like, lends itself pretty well to, like, what this event is, which is essentially guys hitting absolute dingers, right? So that's what you want to see. And then there's also a pitch limit. So in the past, you could see as many pitches as they could during like 2 or 3 minute rounds. But this year, the first round and the semifinals will finish either when 40 pitches have been thrown or 3 minutes pass. And the final will conclude after 27 pitches or 2 minutes. And you can still earn bonus times. So with extra swings and so on. So that's just a little snippet of how it'll work a little bit later on tonight, which you can, of course, watch on Sportsnet. But I look at this and I think it actually, it actually reminds me a little more of the three-point shootout in the NBA because right. that is timed, but it's just like everyone goes once and you just make as many threes as possible, and then there's a cutoff after a certain point because only a certain amount of people can make it to the next round. I kind of like it. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like I know the bracket sets up these like personal matchups, but it's just like if you just find a bad matchup in the first round and you hit like, you know, like you hit 15 dingers and the guy you place hit 14, but in a different matchup, it's like 35 home runs to 34 home runs. Like it doesn't seem very equal, right? So I kind of personally like the change.
I think so too. And it's also nice that we are going to see these guys more than once, right?
Yes.
Which is also a thing that, maybe was a little awkward in years past. So I'm all for these adjustments. I feel like it's a big part of baseball right now to adjust the rules and such. So it makes sense that the Derby would follow along in those paths.
Like I said to you earlier when we had Ben on, but the Home Run Derby has quickly become my favorite like non-all-star game event across the four major sports. I think the slam dunk competition was always pretty high for me, but like I said to you guys earlier, like I don't know, I just think the dunks have all been dunked. You know what I mean? Like unless you're going to go back to the days of like Blake Griffin dunking over a car, yeah. or like they're coming out. Like I think Dwight Howard changing in the phone booth with like the Superman outfit and the cape and like the choir of kids singing and stuff like that. Like unless you're going to like make it like, you know, use props and make it like really, really, you know, for lack of a better term, extra quote unquote, yeah. to borrow a term from our generation.
Yes.
I'm not sure you're going to see a lot of like really crazy dunks that haven't been done before beyond guys just jumping over taller and taller dudes. So I think for that reason, the slam dunk contest has fallen a little bit for me by the wayside. Whereas like you look at the NBA All-Star from last year, and I honestly think the most exciting part of it, Jules, was Steph Curry versus Sabrina Ionescu in the three-point shootout. Like that, unironically, was the most exciting part of any non-All-Star game festivity thing itself from the actual Saturday night competition. And maybe that's going to change this year in the NBA with like Caitlin Clark. I'm sure she's going to be involved in some way. Angel Reese probably as well. But when it comes to ranking these events, now I think the Derby like takes it for me.
Yeah, it's electric, right? You are watching every pitch in the same way that when the three-point contest is on, you are watching every single one of those throws. So it's obviously an exciting part. I will say I wouldn't mind a guy coming out in a Superman cape, you know, for the Derby, or say Adolis Garcia, the hometown player there, comes out in a cowboy hat, yeah. something like that, you know, to bring some fun. Why not?
Yeah.
Right? Something that won't necessarily get in his way there as a cowboy hat would, but you know, maybe a little bit more of that stuff. I wouldn't mind a show.
I'm looking at the odds here. So Pete Alonso, I think rightly as a guy who has won it twice.
Yeah.
And bidding, this actually is fifth straight entrance into the Home Run Derby. So good
for him. He loves it, huh?
He must love playing the Home Run Derby. I don't know. Like I feel like if I've done it like two or three times and you've won twice, I feel like I'd probably just stop doing it, which is probably why Vladdy is not doing it this year. And also probably why like guys like Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani don't really care. It's actually, funnily enough, to mention the dunk contest, it's probably why guys like LeBron and so on have not done the dunk contest over the years, right? When you kind of want that, like those are the names you want to see. Similarly for the Derby, like I want to see Judge hit some tanks, but you got some good names here. Pete Alonso +300 to win. He has the lowest odds to win because he is the favorite. Gunnar Henderson, Bobby Witt Jr. +400. Adolis Garcia and Marcelo Zuna +450. Teoscar Hernandez +900. Jose Ramirez +1100. And the Phillies, Alec Boehm, the sheer disrespect, +1500 for Alec Boehm. What is your pick, Jules, for the Derby? You told me off the air that you actually had two guys you had in mind. So have you made up your mind yet?
Okay, hear me out.
Okay.
I would love to go with Adolis Garcia because I think it would be such a cool story for him to win at Globe Life Field in front of the home fans, especially when you look at his career and everything that's happened to get to this point and get his chance with the Rangers. He was ALCS MVP last year. You know, I was there. I got to cover that and to just, you know, learn more about his journey. And this is a guy that it would make for a very, very good story. However, if we're being realistic here, it doesn't look like he's going to win. It's not like he has been, you know, hitting long homers or even, you know, hitting them for super high exit velocities. He's not lighting up the board by any means. A guy that is, and I'm a little surprised that the odds aren't more favorable, is Bobby Witt Jr.
Okay. All right.
I know. Kind of not a name that I had mentioned pre-show,
surprised.
Right? But this is where we are. I do think that he has a pretty good chance of winning it all, not only because his exit velocity is off the charts right now, and he's been hitting some very, very long home runs. I think he leads this pool of players in terms of average for how long his home runs are. And also, he plays at a ballpark in Kansas City that doesn't necessarily do him justice when it comes to homers. I believe he has 15 home runs 16. Right now, 16 right now. But the truth of the matter is that if he was playing home games elsewhere, that number would probably go up.
And well, yeah, home runs don't go out a lot of Kauffman.
There you go. So maybe, you know, coming into Globe Life will help him out a little bit. And I do believe that he's kind of a sleeper here. He could win the whole thing.
So your official pick is Bobby Witt Jr.
My official pick is Bobby Witt
Jr. Wow. Okay. You know what? I was going to make my pick based on who your pick was.
Okay.
Because I honestly thought you were going to pick Teoscar Hernandez.
Right.
If you pick Teo, I can't pick Teo. We got to pick different people, right? So if we're going to pick, if that was going to be the case, I was in theory thinking of Jose Ramirez, mainly right. because I really enjoy watching him play. Like just from like an unbiased perspective. I know this is Blue Jays Talk Plus, but I love watching Judge hit home runs. I love watching Shohei Ohtani. I love watching Yordan Alvarez. I love watching Jose Ramirez. But if we're picking guys in this field, I think I will. If you're not going to pick Teo, I'm going with Teo. I got to say,
yep.
He is a well-deserving all-star. I honestly thought he should have been a starting outfielder mm-hmm. for the National League. I get why a guy like Fernando Tatis Jr., despite the injury, got picked over him because he's a big-time player in terms yeah. of like star power. It's a fan vote. I get it, but Teo, I think, deserved to be a starter. He is an all-star, so ultimately, I don't think it really matters. But like honestly, I think Teoscar Hernandez might be the only player in the last couple of years since I've been doing Jays Talk and with you and others, we were sitting in the radio booth for the fan at the Rogers Center. Teo is the only guy that I have ever seen in batting practice, which is essentially what they're going to do with the home run derby, just hit a tank into the middle of the video board at the Rogers Center. Like he's one of the, I think maybe one other guy has done it in the last couple of years. I'm sure it's happened before this, but at least in my tenure doing it, he's the only guy I've actually witnessed to do it essentially. Like he has effortless, just prodigious power as all of these guys do. But I mean, plus 900. I'm not a huge yeah. gambler, but that's too much for me to pass.
I have to say, I'm very surprised by the odds
yeah.
and how these players are ranked in yeah. that sense, because you're right. A guy like Teoscar should probably rank higher up. And as much as I, you know, love an Adolis Garcia, it doesn't necessarily compute that he's ranking ahead of Teoscar in some of the odds here. But I love that pick show. Also, it would be kind of fun to watch Vladdy celebrate yeah,
you know
a Teoscar win.
You know he will.
It would be so much fun. And I'm sure we're going to get plenty of interactions, especially as Vladdy is the reigning champ of the home run derby. And something else I mentioned to you before we went on the air, how cool would it be for Teoscar Hernandez to get an ice bucket shower after years of being away from the Blue Jays? That would be pretty cool.
I know some people like don't really care for it. I totally get it because he does it a lot, Vladdy, but I kind of like it. I gotta say, it's something he does of all of the non-baseball things he does that I actually think I personally like the most, even if I totally understand why some do not. Here's my question for you as we get out of here in the next couple of minutes. Are we doing Gunnar Henderson a disservice? Because Gunnar Henderson, I believe in all of Major League Baseball, like in terms of MLB home run leaders coming in, of the guys who have hit actual home runs in Major League Baseball, I believe after Judge and Ohtani, he is number 3 in baseball with 28 home runs. All this guy does is hit tanks. Are we overlooking Henderson too much?
Yeah, we may be disrespecting him a little bit here. It's been a very, very impressive season for him. And you talk about effortless power. This is a guy that has effortless power. I would not be surprised if he ended up winning an MVP award at some point in his career. That's how good he has been. you know, the Derby is a different beast. This is kind of a young guy. It's it is a lot about, you know, maybe stamina or preparation or durability and things like that. Yeah. And so maybe not this year, but, you know, he has a long career ahead. Oh, I think he will win a Derby one day if he chooses to participate again. Just not ready to pick him quite yet.
All right, you know what? That's fair. That's fair. He has pretty, he's pretty good odds, all things considered. But yeah, you're picking Bobby Witt Jr. plus 400. I'm picking Teoscar Hernandez plus 900. Ben Shulman earlier went with Pete Alonso, who's trying to become the second person to win the Home Run Derby three times since Ken Griffey Jr. He is plus 300. That does it for us. You can watch the Derby on Sportsnet a little bit later on tonight. Thanks to Ben Shulman, who we mentioned. Thank you to Jeff Ponce from Baseball America. Thank you to our director, Jeff Rolnick, our producer, Amit Mann, our technical director, Austin Mackey. For Julia Kreutz, I'm Joe Alley. You've been listening and watching Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.